to the Drive Time Show on Toledo Sports Leader, 106.5 The Ticket.
Miguel swings it to fly ball, right field, way back and right. Garcia to the fence, looking up, and it's gone, a home run.
Wow.
Miguel Cabrera with a two-run shot to right is 24th, his fifth home run in the last week. The Tigers lead it.
This 106.5 The Ticket Sports Exclusive is driven by the Low Payment King, Ralph Mahalik Jr. at the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore.
Matthews got his throws. He's got Golden Tate, who makes the catch inside the 15, inside the 10, and he's biking away. He's into the end zone. Pack the bags. Start the plane. This game is over. Oh, baby, how big is that?
Get ready. It's now Drive Time.
Sweeping left side, 10-5. Touchdown, Curtis Samuel. And the Buckeyes win it in overtime. A game that they trailed by 10 points to give Ohio State a 30-27 victory over the University of Michigan.
Here's the host of Drive Time.
Now Gretzky's got a breakaway. He's in all alone. He shoots and scores. Curry blocked the shot. Sent Gretzky in. 3-0.
Mike Miller is out there watching.
On its way, here's Chris DeMarco to win it. He wins it. DeMarco, 15 feet, 4 inches, Stanley Cup, President's Cup to the United States.
All right, everybody, how are you? Another edition of Drive Time coming to you from the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore. My name is Mike Miller. Jim Cushlin back in the studios. Again, we're at the Superstore where the Jeep Celebration Sales event continues. A lot of great deals. Visit MonroeSuperstore.com. One of my favorites, 2017 Dodge Challenger RT Hemi, $158 a month, 36 months. Come on up and see some of the great sales staff here at the Monroe Superstore. Glad to have you on board. All of our guests come via the Vito's Pizza phone line. Vito's Pizza, that is ingredients that you can trust. By the way, through October the 31st, large barbecue chicken pizza, just $11, no coupon needed. 5:15 tonight, Nick Petrovich will join us from Columbus. Now, this little chat with Nick was supposed to be about the Ohio State Buckeyes football team. He is down there for the basketball media day and the preview. I can only imagine what was talked about in that press conference with all the goings-on in college basketball that came out today. Anytime, again, you hear words like the FBI, bribery, college basketball, coaches, Rick Pitino being put on administrative leave along with the AD, 9 other folks involved with basketball, just the tip of the iceberg. So our first question to Nick is, you're down there talking about the new addition of the Ohio State Buckeyes basketball team. I'm curious what the first question was this afternoon at that get-together. So Nick Petrovich coming up at 5:15. Matt Markey joins us every Wednesday. Hunting season right around the corner. And Matt has always done a wonderful job just basically laying out what the rules and the regulations are for the upcoming hunting season, whether it be in Ohio or Michigan. Just does a great job. One of those things you probably could hang in the garage or on your refrigerator, reminding you of the rules, the charge for licenses, how you go about things, websites, contact numbers. Again, great job by Matt Markey. Just a couple of notes here. Number one, Justin Verlander is into the sixth inning. Houston playing this afternoon. And how about this? 11 strikeouts through 6 innings. Houston winning that ball game by a score of 12-2. You know, speaking of the Tigers in our Reeb Funeral Home Detroit Tiger Report, which runs, well, through Friday. You know, the Tigers obviously are not in postseason play, but I made and saw a list, help of the Internet, you got to like it, to see what Detroit Tigers will be playing in the postseason. What a list, about 20 players. Of course, J.D. Martinez, Justin Verlander, Rajay Davis with the Red Sox, Doug Fister with the Sox, Porcello with the Sox, David Price with the Sox, Austin Jackson with Cleveland, Andrew Miller with Cleveland, Edward Jackson and Max Scherzer with Washington, and, of course, Alex Avila, Justin Wilson with the Cubs, Robbie Ray also for Arizona as well. So the Tigers aren't in, but certainly a host of Tiger players will be in the postseason. Jim reminds me What do you have scheduled? I know you touched on it a couple of times. Do you have the play-in wild card games coming up?
I at least have the wild card games because we don't have anything else for other things on that particular Tuesday and Wednesday night. So Tuesday night, AL wild card game. Wednesday night will be the NL wild card game. And then I'm still working with some things, working with ESPN to hopefully be able to get you as many playoff games as I can. But I kind of got to get it hooked up over there on 100.7 because at times we'll need to have that frequency help us out a little bit because we'll be jam-packed here. Like, example, on a Friday night when we got high school football coverage, that's where I'm hoping to be able to put the game. I have no I can't fully guarantee that even at this late hour. I'm still working on the bugs for that.
Good stuff. Great job. We call him the juggler. Again, this is why we are Toledo Sports Leader. Great time of the year. Baseball play-in games again on Tuesday and on Wednesday. A little fall weather upon us today as well. You know, I was looking at some of the ratings, National Football League. We talked about this all week. Down 11%. I expect it to go down even further. National Basketball Association, you watch, they're going to get themselves in a fix too. But the two sports I enjoy the most, baseball and hockey, I got to believe, the Major League Baseball wild card play-in games, the first round and the divisional games, the league championship series as well in the series. I'm going to guarantee you that the numbers for those are pretty good. Hockey right around the corner as well. We're going to have a chat here pretty quick with Dan Watson, head coach of the Toledo Walleye. I know Chris Bergeron down in Bowling Green, he's gnawing at the bit, you know, getting things ready for the upcoming season for the Falcons. So some future guests for those guys right around the corner as well. Red Wings cranking up for their season. Going to be a challenge. Listen, they have not improved that much, but you look at the teams in the Eastern Conference, going to be very, very tough for them to get in this year. All right, everybody, right around the corner, Nick Petrovich. He is down in Columbus. We're going to talk Ohio State football. A little bit of Ohio State basketball. That's why he's down there today. It's media day in Columbus. But obviously, with all going on in this scandalous situation in college basketball, let's not be surprised by this. This has been going on for years. I'm sure it goes on in college football as well. We'll get Nick's take. I think the place to be was Nick Petrovich today in front of the AD and the head basketball coach, Chris Holtman, the new head basketball coach at Ohio State. We'll talk about that coming up right around the corner. This is Drive Time, driven by the Low Payment King, Ralph Mahalik. Jeep celebration sales event continues back at
Talking local sports. It's Drive Time on Toledo's Sports Leader, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Here's the host of Drive Time, Mike Miller.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Drive Time, coming to you from the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore. This is ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Tonight is show 1,445. Today is September the 27th, and yes, we've put 470 different guests on this show. Again, glad to have you on board. I guess in Ohio, the place to be today was down in Columbus, and Nick Petrovich was there. Media day for the Ohio State Buckeyes basketball team. But I got to tell you, I got a pretty good guess, Nick. Number one, thanks for taking the time. Number two, I got a pretty good guess on what the subject matter was about if they chose to broach a subject that, of course, includes the FBI, bribery, coaching staffs, and college basketball. How are you?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
Good. Well, was that subject broached with the AD and new head coach, Chris Holtman?
Actually, it was broached a little bit. Holtman actually wasn't there. He's out recruiting right now, and they're going to meet with him tomorrow. So he was supposed to be there and wasn't. Some of the players were asked about it, and pretty much the general consensus was just total shock. I don't think anyone was completely blindsided to learn that college basketball recruiting can be very dirty, but the entities that are on the prosecuting end are pretty surprising. Usually it's a slap in the wrist from the NCAA. Not necessarily federal prosecutors, where people might seriously end up in federal prison for this.
No question. Indictments, the FBI, and a lot of things going on. Hey, for our listeners on their way home, again, Nick Petrovich joins us from Columbus. It was basketball media day today. We're going to talk football in a little bit. Nick, of course, is the beat writer for The Blade. Educate us a little bit. I mean, you do this for a living. You cover college sports. I mean, I guess the trail of what exactly happens here is pretty clear. Correct me if I'm wrong. and elaborate if you'd like. But basically, somebody sees a kid, let's just use a arbitrary age here, 13, 14 years old. Know he's going to be a great basketball player. He already has his quote-unquote people, clothing lines. Adidas, of course, is mentioned as well. Has a guy that's working behind the scenes to get him to go to a particular school. Money changes hands in a lot of different levels. Is that the whole, I guess, gist of the situation?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's been the real, you know, hidden elephant in the room here for college basketball are the shoe companies over the past, I would say, 10 or 15 years especially. If you look at basketball players, that is one of the absolute few professions when you can look at a kid when he is in the seventh or eighth grade and say, this kid is going to make millions of dollars one day playing a sport. And, of course, they are not allowed to capitalize on their own gifts until they are 19 or a year out of high school. So there is a commodity there where all the coaches and shoe companies know who's going to be the next guy, and they all want him on their team. And it's all hush-hush. I'm surprised it came out to the level that it did, but this has been going on for a while.
Nick, walk me through this. Again, one more time. Educate me here a little bit. So you have a 14-year-old kid. The shoe company then basically is going to try to funnel him towards a particular university. A lot of times, the way I understand it, the head coaches aren't directly involved, but maybe the assistant coaches. So the shoe company then basically makes a deal with the university. Is that what happens there? Now, how does the player benefit from that by choosing the particular school that might be doing business with the shoe company? Where does the player cash in?
It's lobbying by another name. So every university obviously has its own agreement with athletic apparel. Nike is Ohio State. The one on the forefront here is Louisville and Adidas. Michigan was Adidas for a while and is now Jordan Brand. Everyone has their thing. And what is going on at some of these schools, these shoe companies are basically acting on their behalf with knowledge of the assistant coaches to funnel the kids there. And even in some cases, with the intention of sending a kid to a particular agent after he is out of college and then eligible, with the benefit of doing all this to say they were there with the kid from the beginning and then could therefore sign him to a shoe deal. So it's a paper trail with just follow the money.
I guess, again, Nick Petrovich joins us. This is Drive Time. All the guests, of course, on Drive Time come via the Vito's Pizza phone line. Vito's Pizza, ingredients you can trust. And, by the way, everybody, large barbecue chicken pizza, $11, no coupon needed. That is through the end of the month, by the way. I guess the first thing I thought of, Nick, was this. Okay, basketball, where does this end? Does this seep over to the gridiron?
I don't know if it's as lucrative in football as it is in basketball, simply because the apparel is so different in basketball and the careers are so much longer in basketball. You look at some of the big basketball players who have had, you know, monster shoe deals. Dwayne Wade is a really good example who, you know, has had multiple shoe deals, has had popular shoes. You go to Kevin Durant. All of these good guys have 15-year careers in the NBA. Football isn't quite the same deal, and there are just so many more kids, 85 on every team. I don't think it's as pronounced. The basketball has just been so different because there are really only a few kids that are truly, truly elite that you know are going to play in the NBA. The NFL, just by virtue of the sports, has many, many more of those kids.
Very well put. Thanks a lot. I guess the prime example in basketball, everybody knew by the time he was 11 years old that LeBron was going to make a ton of money. I guess that's the easiest way to put this. Hey, let's switch gears a little bit. Rutgers, the Buckeyes are third big favorite, Nick, on Saturday. Does Rutgers present more of a challenge than UNLV and Army did?
Yeah, I think so. Rutgers' roster is better than either of these teams. Rutgers just has the misfortune of being in the Big Ten East, where it's just very unlikely that that program is ever going to contend consistently. But they have, particularly on their top level athletes are better than both of those schools, Army in particular. It's a little bit more of a challenge. Obviously, Ohio State is still favored to win going away. But Rutgers has some real playmakers who are actually going to play pro.
Again, Nick Petrovich joins us from Columbus, a beat writer for the Ohio State Buckeyes, of course, employed by the Toledo Blade. Tell me a little bit about Mike Weber and his health. I know J.K. Dobbins has been very, very good. What's up with Weber? Is he cleared to play yet?
Urban Meyer says he has been cleared to play. He didn't touch the ball at all last week and only, I think, six carries combined the 2 weeks before that. Meyer said he's going to play, but it still remains to be seen how they're going to figure out this thing in the backfield, because I think at this point, J.K. Dobbins is clearly the best pure runner on the roster and is going to continue to get touches. They've talked a little bit about playing them both in the backfield at the same time. But then, of course, if they're both on the field at the same time, they both get worn down at the same time. I don't know exactly how they're going to figure this out. I think ideally they would like to be getting each guy 12 to 15 carries a game, but Weber still isn't quite 100% yet.
Okay, it's the biggest concern. You and I might have talked about this, or maybe it was Tim May and I a couple of weeks ago. Looking at the numbers, the one thing that Urban Meyer has to be concerned about is pass defense. The Buckeyes giving up a ton of yardage through the air, over 200 yards per game.
More of the best in local sports talk. It's Drive Time on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Glad to have you on board. My name is Mike Miller, coming to you for the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore, and we apologize. We understand back at the studios in Arlington Avenue having a little bit of a communication and hookup problem. We were talking to Nick Petrovich, and I guess the one thing I was going to ask him, we got through a lot. We got through the basketball, you know, scandal that is breaking throughout the sports world. Talked a little bit about the Ohio State Buckeyes. The one thing I did want to ask him, the Buckeyes are giving up 230 yards against per game in the air. And that's the one thing I wanted to kind of talk a little bit to Nick about. He was at Urban Meyer's press conference earlier in the week. Again, the Ohio State Buckeyes are a 30-point favorite over Rutgers. All right, everybody, let's take a timeout. My name is Mike Miller, TAS Electronics Update. A little sports and weather coming up after this.
The cure for annoying traffic jams. It's the Drive Time Show on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Here's your host of Drive Time, Mike Miller.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Drive Time. Glad to have you on board. Nick Petrovich joined us from Columbus, Media Day for basketball. A lot of news in the basketball industry. Also talk some Buckeye football as well. Glad to have you on board, everybody. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket is giving you a chance to win a trip for one of six European destinations from Toledo Express Airport via Charlotte, North Carolina. Details and qualifying start Monday with the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza from the Toledo Express Airport, Toledo Port Authority, American Airlines, and Toledo Sports Leader ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. I said that starts Monday. By the way, it did start this past Monday. Glad to have you on board. We do it every Wednesday. Matt Markey, Toledo Blade Outdoor Editor, joins us. Hello, Matt. How are you?
Mike, I'm doing fine. How are you this evening?
Good. Thanks a lot. Appreciate you coming on as always. Listen, Matt's appearance is brought to you by the great folks at Jan's Netcraft Fishing Tackle. Fishing's their passion. Expert advice is always free. Visit Netcraft, Briarfield Boulevard, and Maumee for everything you need to fish for bass, walleye, and anything else that swims. Well, we saw your addition in the Toledo Blade that time of the year, the Sunday Story. And as always, Matt, you and I have talked about this before, a very precise and laid out schedule, rules, regulations, what can be hunted, what can't be hunted for both Michigan and Ohio. One of those things I think a lot of the folks, and there's a ton of them around here that get involved in the hunting season in both states, kind of just put it up on your refrigerator or out in the garage and take a look when each individual season will start, what you need to get going in the right direction.
Yeah, it's important to a lot of people, and it's nice to be able to put it all out there in one package and let everybody see what the various seasons are, and we always try to cover both states equally and jointly if we can, because a lot of our fishermen and hunters enjoy both Ohio and Michigan. So it's important, you know, that we be comprehensive, and it's also important that we include, you know, a lot of the things that are maybe not as important as deer hunting to some people, but we still have a lot of people that are waterfowl hunters, small game hunters, and so on. if people are just curious, maybe they're not a hunter and they're just curious about how these things are structured, wanted to have that information in there as well, because I'll still get calls, emails on a fairly regular basis from people who want to know, you know, why we have hunting and, you know, are we, you know, destroying and killing every last wild turkey and so on. And so anything we can do to kind of dispel some of those myths and base it on, you know, the science of the population surveys and the way that the seasons and the bag limits and all are set up based on those numbers. I think it's important information for everybody.
No, it is. And, of course, archery season starts September 30th, runs through January the 4th. That's in Ohio, and the archery season underway for deer right off the bat. Deer for Ohio as well on September the 30th. October the 1st, archery season kicks off for deer in Michigan as well. Hey, Matt, you noticed and just touched on the wild turkey population. Of course, it's a remarkable recovery, as the headline said, and you detailed that as well. And folks actually seeing them, you know, a little bit closer to, you know, communities where people are living and so on and so forth. It wasn't too long ago I was over in the coast of Lake Michigan, pretty far up north, to be quite honest with you. And I was up early one morning kind of taking a little drive around the lake there. And I saw a ton of them. And I said, you know what, it's kind of odd that it's been so long since I've seen any. And now, as you documented, of course, we're seeing more in this area.
We are, and Ohio and Michigan both have had a tremendous recovery in the wild turkey populations, and it's another one of those things, you know, somewhat parallels, you know, the plight of white-tailed deer in the area where pre-settlement there are, you know, significant numbers spread throughout, and then post-settlement a lot of the habitats turned in, you know, cleared, land is cleared and turned into agriculture. A lot of unregulated harvest. It wasn't really hunting since there weren't hunting seasons. People were out, you know, shooting deer and wild turkeys for food. And a lot of that was just unregulated to the point where, you know, the numbers were down. Wild turkeys were gone from Ohio and white-tailed deer were gone from Ohio for a certain stretch. And then, you know, the recovery is a very slow kind of methodical process. And I think Ohio and Michigan both did a good job in terms of structuring seasons to protect those particular wildlife while the populations were growing and getting reestablished. And also with wild turkeys, did some transplanting from other states where there were very strong established populations. And, you know, the habitat is recovered to, you know, to a certain degree as well. We don't have the extensive agricultural lands that we used to have. More of it's gone back into pasture and meadows and some into forest and all, and it's those things have contributed to, you know, you give them a little bit of habitat, usually they're going to do fairly well. And the reason we're seeing wild turkeys in Toledo, the same as a number of other cities, Columbus, Cleveland, Dayton have experienced the same thing, is they can survive and actually thrive on a fairly small amount of ideal habitat. And in Toledo, they have found that in the Maumee River corridor, the Swan Creek corridor, some of the other smaller creeks, there's enough brushy cover, enough mature trees, which they need to roost in at night to protect them from predators, and they can find enough to eat kind of on the fringes of our urban and suburban neighborhoods, and they're pretty creative about that. And it's just nice to see, you know, you can take a drive through somewhere in town, and if you're near the stream or whatever, you might see a wild turkey. That's, you know, that's pretty neat.
No, it is. And, listen, I was almost startled the morning that I saw a couple, but a long way from Toledo, so it certainly would be an eyebrow raiser in this neck of the woods as well. You mentioned something there, and you talk about it a lot. I mean, these things just don't transpire. These things just don't, fall out of the sky. These are things that are managed by professionals and people that know what they're doing to help refurbish, you know, a lot of different types of habitat and animals and in this area. Hats off to those folks to be able to get involved, understand, you know, what they have to do and how they have to do it.
Yeah, and we're blessed, I think, in both Ohio and Michigan, and I get to work with these people on a regular basis. A lot of committed professionals have made it their life's work to make sure that the wildlife we have is protected and preserved and properly managed. And that also, if there's something that we can, you know, if it's practical to reintroduce something, that we can do that and do it in a real, you know, managed, sensible fashion so that we can restore some of these native populations. Maybe not to the numbers that they were, you know, pre-settlement. That might not fall under the realistic umbrella. But to bring them back to sufficient numbers where we have established populations in a lot of areas, and if people want to observe these animals, they can do that. And if we get to a point where there are enough of the numbers that we need to start managing them, then we can have some, you know, well-structured, well-regulated hunting seasons. And I think both Ohio and Michigan, you know, we have some great people working in those areas. It's a lot of it's behind the scenes. A lot of it would appear to be, you know, fairly thankless work, but I let them know each time I have the opportunity how much that I appreciate it, because, you know, I can see a lot of wildlife. My kids can see it, you know, and so on, because these things have been taken care of over the years by some pretty committed people. So we're fortunate both states have that.
Again, talking to Matt Markey, Toledo Blade outdoor editor. You know what? There's nothing better. One of the real highlights in sports, I think, is folks that can pass on some of their experiences and stories. Then when you get a bunch together like you did out of the Rio Rita, out of the Drawbridge Marina in Port Clinton there, a bunch of high school football coaches that are no longer on the sideline but went out and caught some perch. Wasn't the greatest day fishing, as you documented again, but I can only imagine the camaraderie, the stories, and just good stuff for a lot of guys that battled and competed, sometimes against each other, other times maybe not, but certainly I think a pretty neat outing. How'd you find out about that, and tell me why you thought it was a good idea for a story? I certainly did. Enjoyed reading it.
Well, I found out from Rick Briggle, the former AD at Genoa, and it was really his concept or his idea. You know, wouldn't it be fun if is what he thought. And I thought it was a really good idea because I've seen what, you know, fishing does to people that are even less than casual acquaintances. You put them on a boat together. I've seen this numerous times on charter boats and head boats and so on. Total strangers when the boat leaves the dock, best of friends when the boat returns. You know, fishing just kind of has a way to perform that kind of magic. And Rick's idea was, well, these guys, you know, some of them know each other. They all know of each other. Why not, now that they're out of the game actively, why not take them out for a day of fishing and let them just enjoy each other and tell stories and see how much they have in common? And a few of the guys told me they were initially hesitant, you know, like, oh, do I want to do that? I don't really know these people and so on. To a man, they were absolutely, you know, thrilled with the way the day went. And I guess the best way to characterize it, Mike, is to say that it wasn't a great day for fishing, but it was a great day of fishing. You know, they had that much fun, and several of them made contacts with each other and plans to get together again at some point. And I think they also found out that even though they were at a variety of different schools and maybe different leagues and, you know, different areas and so on, the experiences were very similar in dealing with kids, dealing with parents, just the things you have to do as a football coach in preparation and managing things on the sideline and through the summer and the lifting and all those. I think they found out that there was so much more in common than they might have initially believed. So it was a great outing. The fact that they're all former football coaches seemed to blend in real well with our, you know, prep, our high school football coverage. And so I was glad we were able to run it on a Friday there when everybody's kind of thinking high school football, and got a really significant amount of good feedback. People wanted to know, you know, I remember when so-and-so was the coach here. I wondered how he was doing. It was good to see him in the paper and those things. So it was, a feel-good story on many levels.
No, I could see that. People picking up the paper, looking at the photograph and reading the story. Oh, I remember him. I remember when he coached. I remember when we played against him. Good stuff, no doubt about it. Hey, I was going to ask you in the Toledo Magazine there, the outdoor page, and, of course, you did your story on the Monarch Exodus. Great artwork, great photographs, and your story as well. And an amazing story about the distances flown and in-house GPS, I'll put it that way, and 30 to 100 miles per day. On that outdoors page, Tell me a little bit about how you come up with the idea, and is that a regularly scheduled event? Is there a time frame when you would have the next one and picking out the subject matter? Great, great thing for the Sunday paper. Colorful, easy reading, great photographs, great artwork.
Well, it's one of the unique traditions at the Blade, and my predecessor Steve Pollack, you know, put that together for many, many years with the artist Jeff Basting. And then when Steve retired, Jeff and I, you know, were determined to continue that tradition, enhance it if we could. It runs usually the last Sunday of the month. Now, occasionally we'll get bumped. If it's a holiday or a special occasion, we might get bumped a week one way or the other. But it's usually right around the last Sunday of the month. So there's usually 12 or 13 of them a year. Sometimes we'll jump in and fill a slot that's vacant because I've got 100 more topics than I have Sundays that I can get them in there. But it's a collaborative effort. What usually happens is that Jeff and I will meet and we'll discuss a variety of topics, and then we'll try to pin them down as to do they have a seasonal element. You know, if it's a hunting story, we want to run that October, November, December, September, somewhere in that hunting time. If it's something that fits better in the spring, we, you know, bird watching, whatever, we want to run it in April or in May. So we try to make a seasonal fit. We try to find timely topics, things that are maybe you know, somewhat controversial or being talked about a lot. We've had, you know, several Asian carp pages when there was a hot button issue related to that. But we want to make it fun science, I guess, is the best way to describe it. We want to educate people. We want to have a lot of information and science in there, but we don't want to make it too heavy or too brainy that people are you know, just going to put it down. So the goal is to make it fun and sciencey, but also, you know, to make a great presentation. And that credit goes to Jeff, because usually Mike, I hand him a bucket full of stuff, and then he makes it look pretty. And that's the best way I can describe, you know, the collaborative effort. But it's an awful lot of work, but to me, it's a joy to do, because there are a number of science teachers, elementary and junior high, that use those pages. There's a Boy Scout leader that gets a copy of every single one and puts them up so he can teach lessons to his scout troop with them. So, to me, it's a great service that we're able to provide, and I'm very proud and happy that the Blade has established that tradition, but then also maintained it.
No, great service. I think that was well put, no doubt about it. I'm looking at that great work again. That was last Sunday, the Monarch Exodus. A lot of learning, as you mentioned too, not tedious. You can bang right through it and learn a lot of things. What's up? Are you out in the bush today? I kind of caught you. I thought maybe you were on the move someplace working on a story. Did I sense that correctly?
You did. I was just moving off near the Ballville Dam in Fremont and getting somewhere out of the wind so you could hear me. I've got a story coming for Sunday on some work that's being done in conjunction with the removal of the dam as they drain the water above the dam. It's exposed a lot of river bottom. Well, living in that river bottom are thousands of freshwater mussels. And that's an animal that lives inside of a shell. Some people might look at it and call it a clam. It's not. It's actually a freshwater mussel. Thousands of them are exposed on the river bottom. So there are groups of students, groups of volunteers, and even a group from the Sandusky County Jail that came out and carefully collected those. And then biologists are transplanting them to other sections of the river so those critters can continue to live, filter the water, and be part of the ecosystem there. So that'll be for Sunday. For Friday, I've got a piece looking at the algae bloom from another perspective, because we've heard a lot about it. It's an awful-looking thing and so on. But in terms of the fish, are the perch and walleye safe to eat? And does the algae bloom kill the fish? Because there's been a lot of misinformation out there about those two things. And so I've got a piece on Friday where I've tapped into a number of different experts, and we're going to kind of clear the air and get the facts out there on, you know, whether those fish are still safe to eat and whether or not the algae bloom is killing the fish.
No, good stuff. Listen, very curious about that, because you mentioned your your outdoor page here and colorful and informative. Every photograph you see of that algae, you just kind of look at it and go, wow, that looks absolutely awful. So I'm very, very interested to read the other side of this. Matt, thanks for coming on as always. We'll talk next week.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
Matt Markey, Toledo Blade Outdoor Editor, our Wednesday get-together, does a great job. Glad to have him on board every Wednesday night. Nick Petrovich, who, by the way, took Matt's spot. Matt was the longtime beat writer down at Ohio State. And if you don't know the story, the Toledo Blade conducted a nationwide, well, actually a North American search for its outdoor writer. And Matt Markey, of course, was doing the Ohio State Buckeye beat, and he approached the Blade and said, you're doing a nationwide search for an outdoor writer. I think I can handle it. He certainly has done that. We'll be back to close it out this time out. This is Drive Time.
106.5 The Ticket. Here's the host of Drive Time, Mike Miller.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Drive Time. Thanks for tuning in. 2012, the Detroit Tigers took on the San Francisco Giants of the World Series. 5 years later, again, get this one more time, how quickly things can happen. San Francisco and the Detroit Tigers played in the 2012 World Series. Both those teams right now could lose 100 games. Detroit has the worst record in the American League with a winning percentage of .395 and 95 losses. The San Francisco Giants of the National League, 95 losses as well. Identical record of 62-95. Realistically, Detroit's the only team in the American League that can lose 100 games. Well, wait a minute. Let me do my math here. Probably not. They've lost 95. They lose tonight as 96. We would have 97. Yes, still possible. They can lose 100. They've lost 8 straight games. Other teams, no, that's about it. San Fran and the Detroit Tigers, who met at a 2012 World Series, those two teams both at this juncture could lose 100 ball games. All right, everybody, I gave you a list of about 20 players that formerly played for the Detroit Tigers. It'll probably be in postseason play. Justin Verlander today, by the way, went 6 innings. He had a total of 11 strikeouts. Houston wins. Verlander moves to 4-0 with the Houston Astros. Jim's in tomorrow. I'm in Canada doing hockey. Friday, I'm out at Reset Rossford for our football preview show. I'll talk to you then from the Superstore. Good night, everybody.